We certainly need all over Seattle and all over our entire region to work on retrofitting, repairing, replacing those dangerous older buildings.
Tobin says 25 years have passed since the Nisqually earthquake, the region's last major quake. The magnitude 6.8 tremor struck 30 miles south of Olympia, causing about 400 injuries and an estimated $4 billion in damage. He says the Seahawks experiments will hopefully get people thinking about earthquakes who might not otherwise.
Maybe this is just a small reminder that there's a seismic network out there that's paying attention. And otherwise, go Hawks.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 2nd, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Hannah Francis, Anna Wilcox, and RC. The producer is Althea Billings, and Nick Caperso, our engineer. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Edward J. Vieira, Antonio Gonzalez, Danielle Smith, Mark Richardson, and Mike Moen. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Our reporter, RC, brings us sounds from Minnesota protests this weekend.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. The ICE occupation of Minneapolis hasn't waned, even though Trump officials have said that they might sometime soon. KBOO reporter RC was on the ground in Minneapolis this weekend.
I'm out at the Whipple Federal Building right now where there's a large demonstration, maybe 800 to 1,000 people who are lining along the chain-link fences that separate some grassy areas from the parking lot and access to the building itself. There were demonstrators at the very entrance of one of the main parking lot taking photographs of license plates and chanting and shouting at the vehicles with the ICE officers inside of them. There is a steady stream of vehicles moving in and out of this facility. Probably one is driving by every 45 seconds to 90 seconds. And as other demonstrators are leaving the area, they're honking their whole way along the fence line in solidarity with the demonstrators who are here. I spoke to a number of people who said that also it's important to have a lot of noise, a lot of consistent noise, in hopes that the people inside of the Whipple building are able to hear that people are out here caring, people are out here protesting these injustices, these harms and abuses. Many of the demonstrators here have spoken to the fact that people are critically ill and being denied medical care, critically injured and being denied medical care, that there are fatalities happening inside of the facility, that there are people being temporarily detained and then taken out in the middle of the night and either with little to minimal clothing in this freezing cold weather, left at the gates of the facility with no money, no way to contact anyone, or being dropped off at various parks in the area. And so rapid response teams, street medic teams are tracking that, trying to create secure systems that allow for people to be picked up and taken to safe places or returned to their families or taken to hospitals to receive treatment. So there is this part of the situation where there not only is the visible resistance to what people are describing as the occupation, the invasion, fascism on the ground, the militarization of their city, but also this deep wave of empathy and concern for the people who are inside of this Whipple Federal building. Okay, so I am still here at the Henry Whipple Federal building with
John Brown.
The first thing I want to ask you is, do you mind describing what it is you're wearing?
Carhartt overalls, hoodie, kafuya, and then gas mask and skiing goggles.
Okay. What brought you out today?
Because we have an imperialist in office, and in Minnesota alone, we have faced a lot of corruption going back to just the police that we've had out here with Philando Castile in 2016 and then with ICE, and it seems like Minnesota / Minneapolis is constantly the stomping ground for where police / federal agencies love to enforce their power. And my brother can't make it because of the work. We've constantly been on the front lines and doing organizations and different stuff for the community and whatnot. And whenever there's a chance for us to do good for the community, we try to be out here. We try to donate, set GoFundMes, all different types of stuff. And I think, especially as people of color, it is our time to come together and unite, because the country keeps trying to divide us about color, race, religion. And I think it's time we need to be united, which we never have been. And I don't think America could ever. But I think this would be a perfect time for us to do so, to try to overthrow this. We have an office.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's a quote, I don't remember exactly how it goes, but it's when the government tells you not to believe with your own eyes and ears, it's time to overthrow them or something like that, and I believe that time is now.
Right. And I'm curious if you're feeling a sense of solidarity with what's happening in the Middle East, in Gaza, and what's happening here.
Me, myself, I'm Muslim, alhamdulillah, and especially with what's going down in Palestine, and it's just... And not just Palestine, you got Iran, you have the Congos, you have all over, there's genocides all over. And I feel like, especially America, with Western propaganda, they try to spread what's going on isn't real, or it's not a real place, or it's not as bad as you think it is. And that's not the case. And America has always been America, and they've always tried to downplay mass murders, people dying, genocide, and whatnot. And same with the American dream. They love to spread propaganda that there's an American dream. Well, that's not the case. That's part of the reason what compels me, but that's not just that. Me, myself, I'm a very caring person. So whatever religion I would be, that's still what I would do.
Right. And my experience has been there's been a lot of unity of faith here in what's happening. Mm-hmm. And are there other things that you see kind of sustaining? You know, we're 8 weeks into this. You're 8 weeks into this, sustaining the kind of movement, the still getting up, and people are feeding and showing up. And is there something else besides faith?
I would say this would be the true definition of patriotic, because you have all people from different backgrounds, different races, different religions coming together and stand for the gooder, the better cause of a nation, which I truly believe this is what's going on with America and what has been going on with America since slavery. Got Native Americans, whatever, just the history of America has always been a bloody history.
Yeah.
And we need to come together, like I said previously, which I would like to see that happen, but I don't know if that's possible for America. But I mean, it's looking good, I would like to say. I mean, we're making turning points, but I'd say the biggest thing is for midterms, to get people out to vote, and hopefully we can get the House and the Senate and impeach them for a third time and actually get them out of office. But even then, I don't know if that would still do much, because you still have J.D. Vance and whoever else he wants up next in office.
Yeah, yeah. Is there anything, last of all, that you want people who don't live here to think about at all?
stop being so prejudiced. You know, people love to be like, oh, it's because of immigrants, it's because of people of color, it's because of Muslims, it's because of Jewish, it's because of Christians, it's because of this. Go out and talk to people. Actually have conversations and try to get a better understanding of where people come from, whether if their political spectrum is on the right or left. It's just the people are so prejudiced these days, and I feel like that's one thing that will help us unite is actually talking to people.
Okay, I'm at the Whipple Building with...
Ohaji Free.
Thank you.
Of course. Ohaji Free.
Okay, and would you describe where we're at, what you're doing here, what's going on?
Yeah, so I'm actually with a group of people passing around items such as food, masks, perishables that they can eat, because, you know, we're in the Whipple Building protesting against the ICE facility here, and our goal is to make sure that everyone is not being hungry, saying ICE out. We want them to have a healthy amount of food in their bodies so they can be here as long as possible.
Great. So you're part of the Mutual Aid Network supporting the protest here.
Yes.
Is today your first day or?
Well, yesterday I came here, and this is the reason why I'm doing this today. Yesterday I was arrested because I saw officers attacking a protester for no reason. So I jumped in trying to give her aid, and I was arrested. And seeing that, I just said that we need more community aid here. So I joined up and start passing around some stuff for some people, yeah.
Did they take you somewhere?
Yeah, they took me to the Hennepin County, downtown Minneapolis. I was there for about 7 hours with a few other protesters.
Okay, and then were you released or?
Yeah, I was released probably 7 hours after. They just released the last person a couple of hours today, so.
Okay,
yeah, so they were there overnight.
Did they drop the charges?
I'm still fighting my charges, but I believe one of their charges are down now, yes.
I see. And you're wearing this high visibility yellow vest that says, "Peaceful observer, don't shoot." And so our protesters, I mean, clearly we know that people have gotten shot and killed.
Yes.
Are you worried about shootings happening here?
Well, yes. I'm always worried of shootings happening here, but... just like the soldiers that we have here in America trying to protect and serve, that's what I feel like I'm doing here for the community, protecting and serving.
I see.
So I'm not too worried about anyone shooting me. I'm more focused on protecting the people around me.
Right. And do you know anything about what's happening in the building or how many people are in the building?
So I've been told, based on my reading, it's been over 1,500 people that's been detained. I believe it's over 2,000 now. As of right now, I know numerous people have lost their lives in ICE facilities in general. I believe we had 10 people lost their lives in January alone, and we're expected to lose 120 people in ICE facilities this year alone.
Through brutality and mistreatment?
Yes.
Health conditions?
Yes. And as you can see, I think three people were shot in Minneapolis. Two people lost their lives here. So it's just the outrageousness of the police brutality from ICE just shows that they can do it more frequently than the actual officers here.
Right. And so you're out here. What are you seeing? What's happening on the... today or on a daily basis?
Well, yeah, we're actually seeing community. We're seeing people coming together, actually showing that we do not want ICE here, and we're actually fighting against ICE. So the community's here shouting ICE out, whistling, doing as much noise as possible to show the community that we do not want ICE here.
Right, and do you think that the people inside the building can see or hear you?
Well, I hope so. I've been told that they know that there's people protesting out here. When I was in jail yesterday, there's people telling me there was protesting, so I know they know we're out here, okay. For sure.
What do you think the media is getting wrong or not doing right or not covering?
They're making it as if ICE is just another entity that can be reformed, and that's the problem. They sit here and they try to push the idea that Minneapolis or Minnesota in itself is just going to be this crazy place that's going to be outrageous and it's going to be another George Floyd 2.0. But these are passionate people. These are people that are not going to sit here and let things happen. And that's what Donald Trump wants, and we're not going to let that happen.
Right. Do you believe the rumors that there's going to be a de-escalation or a drawdown anytime soon?
No. Tom Holman is known for doing these type of things. And as you can see, the police are not arresting people for no reason. So if the police that's supposed to be protecting us is protecting ICE, I can't see no de-escalation happening.
Okay. And is the National Guard still here? Are they doing anything?
The National Guard are here, but when I pulled up, they were taking pictures. So there it's a photo op for them.
Okay. Anything else you would want people who are not here in Minneapolis to know?
Yes. There's numerous ways you can help. Donating is one good way. We have multiple people from outside the city, outside the state, including me. I'm from Florida, who's helping, yes. So there's a lot of people coming here and helping. So there's numerous ways you can do that, guys. If you can go to your local communities or local organizations and try to protest with Minnesota, that's the biggest thing you can do.
All right. I want to thank you so much for your time and for being here.
Thank you.
I just had a chance to approach one of the two National Guard large trucks, part of a National Guard convoy, who are sitting in vehicles that are running on the edge of the Henry Whipple Federal Building. They invited me to approach, did not give permission to be recorded. And I asked them what they were out here doing, and they said, "We're here to serve the public." When I asked what exactly that meant, they said it was there's a concern about the demonstrators needing protection. When I asked protection from who or what, there was a real quality of ambiguous or vagueness. And when I asked about that, they said, "We're really not at liberty. We're really not allowed to deliver any kind of information about our presence here, any kind of information about what we're expected or not expected to do. What we can say is that we're here for the safety of the public." When I asked if there was any reaction or response to the perceptions that they're here kind of as a performance or a ploy or a distraction, the guard in the truck in the passenger seat simply smiled and reiterated that they are here to protect and serve the public. Okay, I'm on the corner of Cedar Avenue and 34th Street at what is being described as a filter barricade, and I'm with
Char Cedar.
And could you tell me, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah, so what's happening is there's a filter blockade in the middle of the intersection. It's acting as a roundabout, so cars can still go every way, and then we have people at every street intersection stopping cars that might look potentially like ICE vehicles, just to slow down traffic and kind of act as like a checkpoint. Just to let you know if it is an ICE agent. I was asking earlier, like, what if it was an ICE car, like what would the plan of action be? And kind of the response was just to halt traffic and like maybe gather more observers from the area just to act as like a, I'm not quite sure, honestly. We haven't
kind of like slow it down.
Slow it down and
know who's in on the street.
Yeah, and then alert neighbors if it is an active ICE vehicle.
Right.
So far today we haven't actually encountered one. We've had some like angry drivers maybe that aren't like loving what's happening, but generally the consensus is people are kind of waving and thanking us, and it's cool. Honestly, most of the people here are out-of-towners, and I live down the street, so it's just been interesting just to kind of hear like what their idea of all this is. And a lot of them, everyone I've talked to from out of town just wants to learn. They want to learn about like what people in Minneapolis are doing, and they want to help. And then they want to take whatever strategies we have going on here and bring them back home in case ICE takes over their city as well.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And do you mind just describing the scene here?
Yeah, so Cedar, for anyone who doesn't know, is a very active street. It turns into a highway a few miles south of where we are right now. There's a big pile of just like objects, pallets, old furniture, tables. There's a Christmas tree. We have a bonfire to keep people warm. And then everyone's standing kind of in the middle of all of those things so cars can still move around.
Right.
And then we have interrupters kind of on either side of Cedar stopping cars with pallets in case, just to check on if it's ICE or not.
For sure. And so just from my vantage, there's, like you said, old furniture and windows and art and people with flags.
Signs, yep.
And there are, and then there are some people who are kind of standing, you know, in the street, but not in the way of traffic. And those are, that you call them interrupters?
I would say, yeah, interrupters, yeah.
And I think I was here yesterday and people were handing out flyers about this.
Yep. That's another thing. They're handing out flyers so that people will I can give you one if you want.
Sure, that'd be great.
Just to stop cars to just so that they have something that they can read and have. Mm-hmm. And then also it kind of gives us an opportunity to like get up in like to their face to face with the driver to like assess if it's ice or not.
Yeah.
So it kind of is like a double opportunity there.
I know that there's been a lot of, in general, unfavorable media coverage of mm-hmm. what we might call this collective response or mm-hmm. collective resistance. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you would want to correct? Anything that
yeah.
media is not talking about or getting really wrong?
Oh, like what the media is reporting on? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was just out of town last week and I had some people who didn't live here asking me about the riots happening in Minneapolis, and I mean, I think they're just assuming because of, you know, what happened in 2020, but I mean, it's federal terrorism, you know, and I don't know. I think maybe certain media sources are trying to hide like what's actually happening on the streets with like local people. Like we're just working together. And I mean, I've met more people in the past few weeks than I have in the past few months, you know.
That was KBOO reporter RC reporting from Minneapolis. This is KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis.
Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. The article we're discussing today is called Smoked Out: Federal Agents Are Again Deploying Tear Gas in Portland. Experts say that could be causing significant health problems for Portlanders. And this article is by Jake Thomas. And I have here with me Jake Thomas. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Jake, can you give me a little context?
So tear gas is the focus of this article because it is kind of returned to Portland in some pretty significant ways. There was the last time we heard a lot about tear gas was in 2020 when we had the racial justice protests and demonstrations in Portland. Portland police responded to a lot of these demonstrations with tear gas. Just there was like 100 nights of protests and the Portland Police Bureau got a lot of criticism for just bombarding, you know, protesters with tear gas. And since then, there's been some changes. There has been some changes to state law that put some guardrails on when local police can use tear gas. However, it's a different story for federal law enforcement. As you know, if you've been paying attention to the news, they have had, they've attracted more attention over the last year with the Trump administration back in power. And so we are seeing a lot more tear gas in the streets and some litigation over it.
There was also a temporary hold on the use of non-lethal projectiles, right, in 2020 as a result of all the violence that we were seeing, right? But it only lasted, like, what was it, 14 months?
So in 2020, there was, there's a lot of protests, a lot of demonstrations. Sometimes they did get a little bit... they did get confrontational. They were often outside of the federal courthouse. And, you know, sometimes protesters would get confrontational. They'd throw fireworks, if you'll recall. And so police would respond with using what's called less lethal crowd control weapons. And that includes, of course, tear gas, pepper spray, and then also things like beanbag guns, another what's called kinetic weapons, which are guns, but they fire ammunition that's not metal, and so it's supposed to be less lethal, but it can really harm people. And so there was a lawsuit by protesters, and it was led by Don't Shoot PDX, which was a advocacy group in Portland, and so that said that this was that just the use of the way that Portland police were using force was unconstitutional, that it was infringing on people's free speech rights. And as a result, there was a federal judge agreed and started putting some restrictions on how police could use these weapons.
Your article also says that, well, you know, one of the subheads is more than 800 times the safe level. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
So there was all these protests in Portland during the 2020, in the summer of 2020, response to the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police. And so there's just so much tear gas was deployed that this group called the Forensic Architecture, by Forensic Architecture, which is a research agency based at Goldsmiths University of London. And so they went and examined it, and they found that, quote, there was Portland police very likely significantly exceeded the federally recognized safe levels of tear gas, which is 2 milligrams per cubic meter. And they took samples from locations where police had deployed tear gas, and they estimated that there was more than 800 times the federally recognized maximum safe level.
It really is horrible.
So there's a group that does monitor the use of these less lethal crowd control weapons. It's called Physicians for Human Rights. And there was a media availability with Dr. Rohini Har, who's an emergency physician, and she's an advisor for the group. And she co-authored this report looking at just the use of these weapons internationally. And the report concluded, it had some issues with tear gas, but the report did conclude that these projectile weapons, these what they're called kinetic projectile weapons, which don't shoot bullets, you know, like lead bullets or metal bullets, but shoot like these rubber or plastic, that those just shouldn't be used. Because even if you fire them in a really close range, they can be just as bad. The report found that can be really serious. It can be really, really dangerous firing in close range. And if you fire it from long range, they're really inaccurate and they're really hard to guide. And so you don't know who you're going to be shooting. So this report concluded that there's just really no safe way to use these weapons. It didn't say the same thing about tear gas. It said that there's some issues with tear gas. It can be used too much for sure. But it didn't quite say the same thing about tear gas.
Who's getting affected by this? I mean, obviously protesters are, but it's getting to a level where people in the neighborhood are really being affected, right?
Yeah. So as I'm sure a lot of listeners know, a lot of the attention has been on the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in the South Waterfront neighborhood. That's been attracting a lot of attention. There were incidents over the summer where federal agents did deploy tear gas. And one, I think the most recent documented one was October, is my understanding. And so there hasn't been any for a while, but over the summer there was quite a bit of tear gas. And it got to the point where there's a school in the neighborhood that just relocated, that just pulled up stakes and just said, we can't do this anymore. And there's also a lawsuit. There's a lot of housing in that area. There's apartments, and there's one affordable housing complex called Gray's Landing. And they were just getting bombarded with so much tear gas that they filed a lawsuit seeking an injunction to stop the use of tear gas by federal agents or just to have some restrictions on it. And it described how there's some, you know, people in there who suffer from PTSD, and it's further traumatizing, and that there's young children in the apartment complex, and they have to hide in the closet. Dr. Rohini Har said during this media availability that children are uniquely vulnerable to tear gas. Just with the skin's more pliable, and they're children. And so it's really, she said that it's really not safe. You really should not be shooting off tear gas around kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So how are city officials responding to all of this?
So the Portland Police Bureau, they, there was this the lawsuit we mentioned earlier, and one of the things that came out of the lawsuit is they had an injunction, or they had an order from the judge saying that you need to follow your own bureau policy, and you need to follow state law about how to use tear gas and these less lethal weapons. And there's been some changes to state law. There's a law that was passed during, you know, in the summer. I think it was 2022. It was 2020. And that put some restrictions around when police can use tear gas. I mean, they originally said you had to declare a riot, but it got rolled back later on. But now the Bureau's policy is that they can't just fire it whenever they want. It has to. So the rules are that a commanding officer must authorize the use of tear gas. Police must announce their intent to use a tear gas twice to a crowd, and they have to give people time to leave before deploying it. They also have to notify nearby emergency rooms that they plan to use tear gas or less lethal projectiles. And they also have to try to minimize the tear gas's impact on bystanders and journalists. So they can't just flood an entire street with tear gas, and they have to give people a chance to leave. But that's state law. And so there's it affects state, you know, local law enforcement in Oregon, but it doesn't really apply to feds.
Gotcha. So ICE can pretty much still use it is the way it currently
stands. Well, there's a lawsuit that's saying that this is just the way they're doing it is just completely unconstitutional. And there is, the Attorney General, Dan Rayfield, has opened investigation into excessive use of force. So they're by ICE agents. So they're looking into that. It's my understanding that there has not been any tear gas deployments in a while. So there is pushback locally about this. One thing that surprised me when I was reporting this story is that, you know, other reporters have tried to get ICE's use of force policy just to see if they're following it and what it says. And the document that's been released is this heavily redacted document. It's like almost the whole thing